This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. Turmoil in the Middle East has sent nearly a million refugees to Europe. Many of these people are now in Germany. The German government finds itself overwhelmed by the social service needs of the refugees. Religious organizations are helping. One such church body is the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is in full fellowship with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS recently gave the German church a $100,000 mercy grant to help it deal with the refugee situation. I speak with two Synod officials who traveled to Germany, who spoke with German church officials and the refugees themselves. They found out that many of the refugees are not only seeking food and shelter, but are hungry for the gospel message of salvation by grace through faith.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here's news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod, and the Evangelical Lutheran Synod have released a report on informal dialogue among the synods that began in 2012. A report on the meetings of the three church body leaders from 2012 to 2015 was accepted by representatives from all three synods on December the 2nd, in conjunction with a fourth meeting of the synods, which was held in Jacksonville, Florida. The document serves as a mutually approved report to each synod about the status of informal discussions and meetings held each December since 2012. Thanks to nearly 300 pledges of support, LCMS Youth Ministries' We Raise crowdfunding campaign received the extra $25,000 required to help Synod youth package another 100,000 meals for the hungry during the next youth gathering. The additional support makes possible the overall goal of packing 500,000 total meals to help feed the hungry.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. Это всемирные лютеранские новости.
I'm Kip Allen, host for World Lutheran News Digest. Our guests today are Eric Lunsford, who is the official photographer for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we have Pam Nielsen. What is your title exactly, Pam? I always call you the boss down in the hot potato meetings.
Well, I am the Associate Executive Director of LCMS Communications, so I wear many hats and, not a master of any.
Now, what's just happened here is that they, being Pam and Eric, have been traveling all over the world doing numerous things, and one of which, of course, which has been in the news recently, is the refugee situation in Germany, where the Lutheran Church of Germany has taken a very active role in accommodating those fleeing the violence in the Syrian civil war. Eric, Pam, what did you see in Germany?
I think we saw just really incredibly interesting profiles of lives who are fleeing for their life. And these are people who are persecuted. These are folks who cannot be pictured a lot of times, who are afraid for their life, but yet are professing Christ and coming to the church. And they are being welcomed with open arms by our incredible church partner, the SELK, which is the Confessional Lutheran Church in Germany. So absolutely incredible to see this kind of work, but also the lives that are affected by this.
Yeah, I think for us, what the impetus for our trip is that President Harrison, working with our other ministry leaders, said our partner is reaching out. Obviously, Germany is overwhelmed. We all see it on the international news. So we said, we have some mercy dollars. We know how they're bearing Christ in word and deed. We know that they can use our help. So we granted the partner church $100,000 and really put no strings on how they would use it, except that it would be towards these refugees that they're ministering to. And so we said, well, we need to go. That's a story in itself. What is it they're doing? And we sent Eric, myself, and Roger Drennan, one of our writers, to get on boots on the ground, see what they're doing, talk to pastors who are actively involved in this, and meet the refugees themselves, because that too is in the, at least in the American news, they're all grouped into sort of one group and they're all bad and they're all from the Middle East. And we wanted to go deeper. And we learned, I think, for me, it was an eye-opening, that our German partner church has been working with Middle Eastern refugees for 20 years or more. They've been coming at a much slower pace, but consistently for that long. And we also learned that while they've been made themselves available, they haven't necessarily been actively reaching out to these. But these refugees, almost every one of them raised in a Muslim family, have in some way been prompted, invited to, found their way to one of these Lutheran churches, and the churches embraced them wholly, answered their questions about God and religion, and now there's this phenomenal growth. In one congregation, the one in Berlin, something like 800-900 in the past mm-hmm. 6 or 7 years. The church is just exploding. While we were there the weekend, we were actually there the weekend of the French terrorist attack, which was a little unnerving, but that weekend alone, 70 new refugees had come with others who were already either in catechism classes or who had been baptized and confirmed, and were asking, how can I get into a baptism class? I want to learn these things. They were lining up. The pastor had to hand out numbers. He said, I've run out of numbers. I don't know what to do. I'm overwhelmed, the response.
Did you get any answers from the refugees themselves as to why they were converting? As you know, in Islam, should they renounce Islam, they have a death sentence over their heads. Mm-hmm. And these people, not just fleeing this, they could be hunted down anywhere.
Yeah. We heard a number of different stories. One, help me recall, was it something between 500,000 and 1 million Christians in Iran?
Yeah.
In an underground church. They can't quite get a handle on the number, but they know it's in that kind of huge numbers, 500,000 to 1 million. So people already there, coming out, knowing they're in trouble, or being found out, fleeing. Others simply fleeing their countries because of the state of things. Government broke down, violence, the ISIS, all of that. And then they would say, we start to compare the God of Islam and the God of Christianity. And, you know, what were some of the things they were telling us? A violent God compared to a God who sacrifices himself for his people, a God who demands everything from the people, and a God who freely gives to the people. Those professing the one religion, so often violent and angry and oppressive, and those confessing Christianity, so often kind and caring towards their neighbor. They were seeing tangibly this stark difference, asking questions, looking at the holy books, that kind of thing. I don't know if you have some.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, a lot of it was very sensitive, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they want to get the word out, but some of those folks, I mean, they're being tracked. I mean, people are watching them. And like, just like you're saying, this, a lot of this is a death sentence for people.
Mm-hmm.
So it required an extraordinary amount of sensitivity and just a lot of care in the storytelling effort.
Yeah.
To help bring about this story, bring an awareness to it, but also maintain the security and privacy of those who are fleeing,
mm-hmm.
who are persecuted.
I once spoke to a missionary to, I believe it was Indonesia, and while he was there as a missionary, there was the tsunami. And of course, the Lutherans and other Christian groups were very heavily involved in the relief effort there. And he told me that in the aftermath, a number of Muslims, including relatively high clerics, would come to him and say, why are you doing this? These are not your people. Why are you helping? And the answer was, our God commands it. And he said that through the example of the unquestioned love and of the unquestioned helping of our brothers and sisters, regardless
of who they are, which in Islam they really don't do. I mean, there are there are Islamic charities, but they only really help
their own. And many of these Persians, the Iranians, they fled Iran and went into Iraq, believing that they would get help from their Muslim brothers there, and were met with no help, and so had to leave Iraq. And of course, that's where, you know, there's a that strong ISIS. You know, we individually talked to different ones. I talked to a couple who had a good life, as good as you can have in a kind of a war-torn country, but he was a hairstylist in a salon, maybe mid-20s, and he told the story of how on his own he was starting to question the God of Islam, the God of Christianity, searching on the internet, reading what he could find, and sharing his thoughts and his questions, not even really having switched, but openly questioning with a trusted friend, a colleague at the hair salon. And then he said, you know how you goof around, and one day I grabbed my buddy's wallet and I was holding it up in the air and like keeping it from him, and then suddenly all the things fell out. And he said, as I tried to pick them up, I saw his identity card with the secret police. And then I knew that here I had been too honest with him about my questions, and I knew I was in trouble. I knew I had to flee. Now, as he's telling me this, this grown man starts, his body is like shaking, and he starts to sob, recounting the terror of that discovery and what that meant for him. They fled. They sold everything. He said the government took all his contacts on his cell phone and called and connected with every one of those people and grilled them about where they were and what they were doing and pressured them. You know, we heard another young man talk about his fiance still in Iraq, doesn't know how to get her out. His mother and brother are there. His father has made it out to Turkey. He has come to Christ. He said, you cannot take my picture. You cannot mention my name. My family will be harmed. They will know, and they will pressure them. They will beat them. They will imprison them. Just, he was terrified that we would, you know, share his identity. We heard story after story like this. And what's, I think, phenomenal, these are young people. These are not old, crippled up people. These are people that left careers, people who are educated, who were professionals, and they fled. And many of them fled as full-on Muslims, and then by coming to Germany, just fleeing the war-torn life that they had, then started hearing about the God of Christianity.
Well, Pam, how is the church, they're actually helping these refugees? The LCMS has just given them a $100,000 grant to use as they see fit. How is this money being spent? What is the church actually doing?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's a question we asked, and they said, the church leadership are holding that money and asking the individual churches, of which he's about 20 of the 160 or so congregations of the Zelk are actively doing refugee work. They've asked them to write up a proposal, and here's how we'll use it, and set a budget, very careful how it will be used in every way, and then apply for the use of this money, and with the commitment to track how they're using it and to provide the results of it. So it could well be used for job training so they can get a new job. It could be used to provide, one of the things already they're doing is providing transportation from the refugee camps so they can come to Bible studies and to church, because in many cases they're in camps that are quite a distance. They couldn't walk or bike, and they don't have bus fare or train fare. So that, it may be helping find housing for a family or food or furniture. Really, we've put no strictures on it, and they are just beginning to figure out how they'll do it. But, you know, maybe, Eric, you want to share a little bit what we learned about what's been going on for 20 years, the kind of ministry they've had with them. It's a lot of teaching, isn't it?
It sure is. And, you know, it actually brought me back to a scene I remember, fellowship after church.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my
incredible.
Goodness. You walk down into this fellowship hall, and it is standing room only. And the way they move chairs around to overhead, make space for people, they pass it like a, what is it, a mosh pit of sorts through it, you know, they through this sea of people.
And it's a meal. It's not just donuts and coffee.
Oh, goodness. It's a traditional Persian meal. Everyone is served, but you see that. And the influx of people that are waiting in the doorways just to come in, how the ministry has worked so that members are going out and they're saying, hey, come and see what's here.
You know, they're bringing their friends.
They're bringing their friends in.
What about the language barrier? I mean, these people, they speak Turkish, they speak Arabic, they speak Urdu, you name it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you see Dari, you see Farsi, there's a little bit of Arabic in there. And, you know, a lot of that is working through translators. And when you go up to listen to Bible study in the, again, a packed sanctuary for Bible study.
Yeah, on a Saturday afternoon, 150 people under the age of 50 gathered in a church for the Bible study.
Two languages.
Yeah, there's a translator up there. Actually three, because that's where we first discovered that there are deaf refugees, and they were signing. So the pastor's teaching in German, and there's a gentleman who clearly he's been in Germany for a long time, but he knows both languages well. He's translating, and then there's a woman sitting next to two people, and she's signing. And I don't know, is she signing in German or Farsi, or is it American Sign Language? We don't know, but it was clearly sign language. There were hearing aids, and you know, the whole thing, very easy to discern what was going on there, and quite incredible. I felt we actually were able to talk to more refugees than the Germans, because they learned English. A good number of them spoke pretty good English. And so I think learning German for them is a bit of a stretch, because that wasn't a language that, you know, lots of people in the world are taught some basic English, but German, if you're living in Iran, probably not.
Well, what was the reaction of the refugees when they found out that you were American rather than German, and that you had traveled all the way from the States representing a church body?
We were welcomed. In Leipzig, for instance, they set up a special event because of when we were coming. The pastor was on vacation. His assistant or his partner, who really works with the Germans more than the Persians, he said, I'll be there. We'll open the doors. And by the time it was over, what do you think, 35, 40 refugees there?
A small packed room.
And they were so eager to meet us and to talk to us. They had everywhere coffee and cookies. So we had so much coffee and cookies. But
what were some of the questions they'd ask you when they found out you were American Lutherans?
What do you know about the people of Iran, for example?
Yes.
You know, because we are very used to, as Americans, hearing in media about the regime. You know, I know one of the latest stories I read about Iran was how there was a daring front page commentary in one of their newspapers, which you never see because there's not freedom of the press. And so you hear about this regime. I had fortunately had known an Iranian colleague before when I was in newspapers who had described a lot of Iranian culture about the people. It's two different things. I mean, there is a regime and there's Iranian people.
And they really worked to explain that to us. We are not the government. And where they were telling us, remember the soldier, the former Iranian army soldier? He was so animated. He's up on his feet and he's, you know, in Farsi.
Intense.
You knew he wanted to say something. And the pastor said, you know, they made them say death to America. They made them hold up their guns in front of cameras. They made them speak these things. And then a woman said, none of us believe this about America. It is our government. So they wanted us to know this, that they, the people of Iran, are not our enemy. It was really quite incredible.
Absolutely. And I'm going to add in these two primary congregations we were observing and working with, there was a sense of trust for our visit. One of the difficult challenges I face is that this congregation in Berlin had been just onslaught with media.
Oh, and worldwide media.
Worldwide attention. In one way, it's great because it's bringing wonderful awareness to the story. The other thing is you have media person after different organization come through, some positive, some negative stories, things like that. So seeing someone with, you know, photography equipment, knowing kind of like the role I'm playing, for me, it was important to gain the trust. And so I very much enjoy and respect those kind of assignments because I get to show that I'm here for the right reasons. And we are here to show this work for Lutherans here in the United States, show how this work is. And certainly by the time we left, I firmly believe that I had gained that trust and was able to work with and really show the joy, especially some of these families who were baptized while we were there. Just wonderful little moments that normally people don't see. And that's great. I like to bring these little moments and make it accessible and unexpected for people who couldn't be there.
Yeah. And, of course, we'll have a gallery of this on our website. Yeah. One question I wanted to ask about that is there has been some, I suppose, criticism is perhaps the correct word, where there has been questions raised as to whether or not the people who are saying they are converting are actually converting or simply trying to gain residency within Germany. And also, of course, in view of Paris and San Bernardino.
Absolutely.
Vetting.
This was one of our chief questions. We are like, we are going to the source and we are going to ask. And we asked it everywhere we went. And what we learned was, for those that are coming to faith, who are professing, they are being actively persecuted by their fellow countrymen. And we just heard from the one pastor that a young man took his New Testament. He said, I can't keep enough New Testaments in stock. They are literally ripping them out of my hand because they want them so bad. He said, I can't keep them on the shelf. They take them into the refugee camp. They read them when they get an opportunity. They put them by their little cot. One man had his ripped and a 30-centimeter gash cut across his back from a beating that required stitches because he had in his hands a New Testament. Mm. So this is no better life for them. The German government, I think, originally made no distinction whether you were Christian or Islam. They're beginning to notice a distinction, and there are these cases where if they've converted, they actually have to profess the faith in detail to a judge who often is not even Christian, who is goading them and persecuting them in their questioning. And the kinds of questions that they're asked, I would challenge any of us lifelong LCMSers to be able to answer on the spot in a courtroom. That, and these people are consistently doing that. They know their scriptures, they know who they are, and they understand who Christ is for them, and they can articulate it in ways that we just, I mean, every time I think about it, I get emotional. We were so privileged. This was not set up for us. It just so happened that at the church in Berlin, there were to be 10 baptized on the Sunday we were there. So we arrived on Saturday at noon, met with the pastor, and then he said, well, we have Bible class, so we watch that. We talk to people, and then he said, after that, we will have the practice for the baptism confirmation. And so, just like you would see Pastor Smith or Pastor Mueller anywhere in, you know, across the LCMS with his confirmands. Okay. When you come to the altar, you kneel. You must kneel here. And you know, when you come to the font, put your head down. Don't make me push your head down. You know, all these little details that we were just chuckling because it's so familiar. But laced into all of that, he said, 5 or 6 times, when you receive this baptism tomorrow, you will turn your back on Islam. You will say no to Allah. You will break a bridge to your former life. I want you to understand this. I want no one to say to me they did not understand that they, in taking this baptism and receiving it, have turned their back and have denied Islam. Do you understand this? Yes. It was so serious and over again. And then the next morning in the baptismal rite, the part we all are familiar with, do you renounce Satan and all his works and all his ways? Yes, I do renounce him. Now they're saying this in Farsi, I think. Then he says to them, do you renounce Islam? Yes, I renounce Islam. Every one of them out loud in a church, 350 people, wall-to-wall packed, stairwells, balcony, aisleways. Incredible.
Not just a statement of faith, but a statement of courage.
Yes, because he said, I know there are spies. that are in this congregation and are taking notes and are reporting back. And the people know this too.
Hmm. Frightening and inspirational at the same time.
Oh, incredible. To leave your home and the stories, you know, we said, how did you make it from there to here? On foot. From Iran, through Iraq, through Turkey, Greece, up through Europe to Germany, on foot. Well, where did you sleep? In fields, in forests. What did you eat? Oh, if we could find a fruit on a tree or a corn cob or maybe someone give us food. One young lady said, our group spent a week hiding in a forest, and we had no food for a week. They dodged bullets in Turkey, where the government has said, shoot on sight any refugee. They watched their family members and friends die along the way. To be so desperate to leave the life you had, for it to be so awful that you would take your family and you would do this, or you would leave your family and do this, and then come to this new land where you've, you know, a completely different culture, language, and then to be open to hearing. And they're coming to the churches, and they want to hear the word. They want to see, they want to read the Bible. They want to have it in their hands. It's precious to them.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.